Welcome to Bee's Table Talk, the podcast in which we have great conversations about business and our economy. My name is Bee Kyle, President and CEO of the St. Paul Area Chamber, and I'm very glad you've joined us. My guest today is Jude Bricker, CEO of Sun Country Airlines, and we're going to talk about Jude's journey from being a captain in the Marine Corps to President and CEO of Sun Country, MSP's second largest airline in the nation's 11th largest. Jude, thank you so much for sitting down with me today.
Hi, Bee. It's great chatting with you again.
Yes, absolutely. So I'd love to introduce folks to this amazing person I'm getting to know. You joined Sun Country in 2017. And what was it about this opportunity that enticed you to move from Allegiant, where you had been for the previous, 11 years?
Yeah. Well, so I left Allegiant without an intent to come here. I was just moving on. And Sun Country at the time was owned by two brothers whom I remain close to today, Mitch and Marty Davis. Mm. And, we, through discussions with them, decided that Sun Country had a lot of potential that was bottled up. And so what I was really looking for was an opportunity where a company had a wide margin between what its potential was and what its performance was. And, it just all worked out to where Mitch and Marty were looking to move on and concentrate on their other business endeavors. I was able to get a significant stake in the business. And then, I believe that Sun Country could be a lot more than it was at the time, which was exciting and also allowed me to raise capital to help move Mitch and Marty onward. So everything just kind of worked out, and there was a lot of really good things that Sun Country was already doing, and that was attractive to me as well. That it wasn't just, it's not a turnaround in the sense that there was, operational issues, or it had a good customer perception here in the Twin Cities. They were good operators. They had a great charter business. They just weren't making any money. And so, with some tweaks to the business plan and some growth and some capital investment, we were able to make a big difference here. That was what was exciting about it.
That this is a very interesting airline to me as well. The customer perception, you're right, is really strong. And yet there have been some real challenges. So I consider Sun Country to have this great staying power. The airline is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year. But if you go all the way back to 2008, former owner Tom Petters was convicted of fraud. The airline files for bankruptcy for the second time. I know you weren't there yet, but take us through some of that history that you have really impressively managed through.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's an amazing accomplishment that Sun Country survived that and its other bankruptcy as well. That was the second bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. They had gone bankrupt in after September 11th, not unlike many other carriers. Mm. But a carrier of this size that had survived that is a testament to those folks that were sticking around and making it happen. I'm truly amazed. The Petters incident was traumatic for this company because the company went through bankruptcy in order to protect the assets of the company and keep it going. And that was through that process, through that receivership process, it was where Marty Davis was able to get control. Mm. Kind of eventually set us into the path that we're on now, because he made some investments in the company. He brought in new management. I think he invested in employees so that they felt a sense of hope and purpose. And I would attribute to him a lot of the fact that Sun Country is still here today. Because he really did pull them out of that really trying period with the Petters incident. Now, I want to point out that nobody here had anything to do with what Petters got in trouble for.
Noted.
We were one of his many companies that he owned. And, when his house of cards came tumbling down, this company just had to kind of circle the wagons and go into receivership for protection of our assets.
So fast forwarding into 2017, mm-hmm. You really took the company through that transition to its current ownership structure with Apollo Global Management out of New York, right?
Yeah, so I joined the company in August of 2017, moved my family from Vegas to Minnesota.
Welcome, congratulations. That's good.
Thank you. It was great, I love it here, I really do. My kids were teenagers, and so, you know, it was a bit of a challenging transition for them. I think looking back, they would all say that they're grateful that we did that. Vegas is a difficult place to be a teenager.
I bet.
So, you know, I think it was good for everybody. And so I jumped right in, and what we did in the fall of 2017 is build a plan to make Sun Country into what it is today. We did a little bit in trying to make immediate improvements, but airlines turn more slowly. The arc of airline transitions is a lot, rather long one. And so the first objective was to take out the owners, which is what they wanted, but also raise capital to make investments. The interiors were old and we wanted to take out our first class and put more seats in the airplanes. We had pretty antiquated technology systems that needed to be overhauled, and that took a lot of money, and I needed to attract a whole new management team. So Apollo was really helpful in all of those things, and we agreed with them around the beginning of 2018 and closed that deal in April of that same year. And that was a cathartic shift in the company's history, because it changed from a company that was kind of a sleepy hometown airline doing very modest growth and really just kind of doing the same thing every year to a rapid growth company, attracting new talent and really investing heavily in the community and in our growth. So that was I'd say Mitch and Marty deserve a lot of the credit for bringing the company from the verge of liquidation, really, and kind of helping it survive through that period, giving employees hope. And then I think Apollo deserves a lot of the credit for, you know, increasing the trajectory of the business and putting capital to work here, and allowing us to make the investments that were necessary to bring us to the top of the industry on performance. And that was, you know, so that was really, really important. You know, Apollo is probably debatable, but I would consider them the largest private equity firm in the world. And, you know, so they bring a lot of expertise about best practices, vendor management, building a board and building a management team. They were really, really helpful in our transition. It's been great working with them.
Well, and I know you're a modest guy. Every time we talk, you know, there's a lot of recognition of others, but what you've done is really transformational as a business case for anyone in business college to study. You've got, besides being a regular scheduled service airline, you have charter and cargo. And then in the midst of COVID, my goodness, you take the airline public. So a journey you've had since 2017. Can you talk us through that process of going public in 2021?
So, you know, we had immediate fruits from our transition kind of the timeline in 2018, Apollo made an initial investment. We had spent that money within a year, largely on cabins, but also in the summer 2019, we revamped our whole distribution platform. So that's the consumer-facing website, the booking engine. So, you know, how we manage our inventory and all the relationships that we have with travel agents, all that went into place in the summer 2019. And then the fall of 2019, we were doing really, really well. Going into the spring of 2020, we negotiated a deal with Amazon to bring on our cargo business, which solved a seasonality problem for us, because one of the biggest challenges about being a leisure carrier in Minnesota is that Minnesotans all want to go to the same place at the same time. And so in the wintertime, we have this fantastic business taking Minnesotans down to warm destinations like West Florida. Mexico and Caribbean destinations that people have been going to for generations, and Southern California, et cetera. And then in the summertime, we have really, really strong, what we call in the industry, VFR traffic patterns. That's, you know, visiting friends and relatives. So big city connectivity.
VFR, I love that.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And so what happens is you have a really good March, a pretty good July, and then you got a bunch of months that are good, like February and January, December, June, August. And then you have really lousy months. And what this company's always struggled with is how to get through those periods. And so we had a fundamental challenge of our growth about adding capacity that would make the good times better, but make the bad times worse.
Totally and, see that. Absolutely.
Yep. And so this cargo opportunity really solved that problem by giving us ways to deploy our crews when they weren't flying for scheduled service in the off-peak periods like September. And so we did that deal with Amazon. We were all queued to go public. This is spring of 2020. And I was in New York for meetings around the IPO, planned IPO, right when, you know,
March 12th happened.
Yeah. I mean, the world was sort of quickly falling apart around us. And New Rochelle had their lockdown about that time. And we came home and, you know, bookings went from record levels in the beginning of March to zero.
I mean, zero.
Zero bookings in April of 2020.
We were selling. Think about that for a minute.
Yeah.
Record to zero.
In 30 days. It was, I had never obviously been through anything like that. I don't think anybody had anything like that. And so we just, you know, we were like in shock for an afternoon and then kind of, you know, tied my boots up and got to work. And it just kind of, we had a few instances of near misses. You know, we were down to not much cash, and Apollo had our backs, but they didn't, you know, they hadn't yet put in any capital, and we had to get Amazon up and running. We had a financing that we had started before COVID, and we had to close that out. And you know, if any of these didn't work, it would have been a big challenge for us. And then of course, government support and that started in early May. And, you know, by the summer of 2020, we knew we were going to survive. But we certainly weren't going to go. And so, you know, then we go another year, and by spring of 21, you know, there were vaccines that were becoming widely available. It certainly looked like we had our hands around COVID. There wasn't at that time yet any significant new strains, and the markets were ripping and everything was going really well. So we went public in March of 21. And that is another cathartic event in said country's history, because it was for the first time we were able to access public markets for capital,
mm-hmm.
not just equity, which is what an IPO is, but also the debt capital markets. There's some synergies there. You know, big private companies like Cargo can still access public debt markets, but for a company our size to be in a public debt market, like a double ETC, which is an airline specific securitized debt facility, it really helps to be a public company with audited financials that are available to the public and a, you know, market price that we can point to. So, you know, we went public in 2021 and raised a bunch of money. And, you know, I think for the first time, we basically reduced the risk of, you know, for all our crews, the interpretation is there's no risk of furlough. We were the best performing airline from a margin perspective, in 10 quarters, we, you know, up until the very last quarter, actually. And then, you know, and then for the first time we had public financials with a lot of cash that we had raised through our offering. It should be said that Apollo didn't sell any shares at the offering. And we just sold shares to the public. So it was a capital raise for the business to help us further our growth plans.
Wow.
And so then, you know, so kind of you think about the evolution, build a business plan, go, you know, that's when I got here. And then we went out and raised money on the back of that plan. on the promises that of that plan. And then, you know, then we execute the plan and then take the demonstrable effects of that plan to the public markets and raise money. And now we're in the process of bringing, you know, kind of for the first time, many of our labor groups up to full market rates, which I think is something they're excited about. You know, the value proposition of working in some country had always been, I think, you know, it's kind of this small thing. Like, it felt like a family here, which is great. You know, but you kind of took less pay because there was always a disruption or risk or the company couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're changing that now, which is great. So we signed a pilot agreement in December. We're right now in negotiations with our flight attendants. And so, you know, it's just a really exciting time for everybody to now be the beneficiaries of the success that the company's had.
Well,
which is really, really great.
You must be thinking pretty, really gratefully and looking back on your foresight to partner up with Amazon.
Yeah.
Because, of course, that company and other online retailers just exploded. It's just the yin and yang. When part of the economy is collapsing and the other is just exploding, and you got to be a part of that in terms of some business, right? Some clients.
Yeah. So we actually generated an operating profit in 2020, which is amazing.
It's
amazing. And that's because we had Amazon flying. I mean, there wasn't much to do on the scheduled service side. People weren't traveling.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was the best thing that we had. And when I did the deal in 2019, you know, it was kind of like, this will be good for us. It'll help balance us out. But, you know, it was a big push at the board level and with Apollo to try to get this through. Because rightly so, we had a lot of questions about being distracted from our core business and, you know, trying to work with our pilots to fly the kind of cargo schedules that are typical of cargo carriers, like overnights.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just going to be a cultural change. And by the time we were flying our first mission for them, which was in May of 2020, it was the best thing we had going by far. And it really did get us through. It really did get us through COVID. You know, and then now we're in a state again where it's like that cargo business is going to be, you know, we want it to be about a quarter of what we do. And that's so that we can have a balanced opportunity in sched service with our peak and off peak. So, you know, it was definitely better than I expected it to be in the first 2 years. And I get that a lot. Like, oh, wow, this is a brilliant move. But like
hindsight.
Yes, it was. We got really lucky. And so they've been great partners. And I hope to continue to grow that business kind of right alongside our sched service. I think the right ratio for what we're doing here in Minnesota is about a quarter of our flying on an annual basis should be done in things like cargo. It could also be track charters. I mean, we're certainly different. For us, it's kind of the same. But in both of those cases, it's a very flat production and very stable margins, you know, with pass-through costs like fuel expenses.
Well, I mean, you say it's luck, but who was it that told me recently the quote, good luck favors the prepared?
Yeah.
You know, kudos to the big thinking. And so I'm wondering.
But also, I just want to point out, like, an airline taking on a whole nother business line is I think, an indication of the can-do attitude that the company has now had before I got here. And that's just really important, you know, because we've been doing charters sort of all over the world as part of our business for 40 years. And now this is just the next thing. And so if I'd have, you know, at any other airline, even as CEO, if I'd have said, hey, we're going to start an all cargo business, people would be, oh, that's not possible. We're not going to be able to do it. You know? But here it's like, okay, yeah, it's okay, let's do it. Let's see what
So it's a good culture fit for you then.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
That there's room for really open thinking and new ideas, which you have to have that culture match.
That's true. So, at other airlines, they think that's crazy.
Well, and it's fun to some degree, a business leader needs to find the size of company that aligns with their pace of movement, right?
Like that's right.
You can have great ideas, but the bigger the company, the harder or perhaps the slower is, which is what you're alluding to. So interestingly enough, though, you've taken, you found a dynamic entrepreneurial sized company, but now you've made it the second largest airline in this market.
Yeah. And I think there's room to run.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So let's think about looking forward right now. So, we wrestled through the pandemic, which just crushed the industry. And now we're looking at 8.5% inflation. We've got rising fuel costs. And I'm sure our listeners are familiar with the media coverage of the airline industry operations in the last few months and the challenges you're facing, particularly around those economic indicators and then talent development. How are you pivoting and working with those challenges?
Yeah, so let's talk first on fuel. I mean, fuel prices goes up and down and we don't hedge. And a lot of questions I get from people are like, why don't you just hedge? And there's two reasons. One is whenever people say that, it's when fuel's going up.
Right.
Up and down. And what hedging does is it locks in the price.
Right.
So if you're a good trader, perhaps you can lock it in low, but I don't trade fuel as for a living, and the other part of that trade does. And so I think on the whole, we'd probably do worse than just buying the spot market. The second point is the business is meant to be flexible. So when fuel prices go up, there are markets or flights that are no longer economic. And the best example I can give you is this summer in Hawaii. When I got here, we launched Hawaiian service. We only fly it from Memorial Day to Labor Day. We fly it out of San Francisco and LA to Honolulu. And it's really, really good. But, it burns about 50 gallons of gas per passenger to fly that mission, as opposed to flying somebody from here to Orlando, which is about 20. Mm-hmm. And so, fuel goes up by $2, I got to get $100 a fare increase to make the same amount of money on a passenger flight in Hawaii as what I have to do, in Florida, it would be $40. So those markets are just much more sensitive to fuel prices, and we cut them. Mm-hmm. The other example is just kind of in the calendar. You can think about some simple mathematical examples, purely hypothetical or helpful here. If in the second quarter we had an average fare of $150, it's about half peak and half off peak. So 6 weeks of off peak and 6 weeks of peak. If the peak period is $200 and the off peak period it's $100. Let's say fuel goes up to where everybody has to pay another $40 and fares go up by 30%. So those off peak fares go to $130. With cost increases of $40, those flights then are cut. But on the peak period where it's $200, fares go up by 30%, that's $60 increase, fuel cost goes up by $40, those flights make more sense. And so we concentrate our flying on periods of peak opportunity when fuel price increases, and that's by design. So that's fuel price. The other thing is talent. And it's a really tight labor market. There was a report out a few months ago that Minnesota has the lowest unemployment of any state ever right now. Yeah, which is amazing. That's an amazing stat to me, one that I would be skeptical of believing, by the way. But anyway, I mean, I think it's just it's an amazing time as a young person with talent, because everybody wants to hire you. I think that's wonderful. By the way, at Sun Country, we have to pay market rates to attract talent, and we also have to offer value over and above that. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to say there's promotion opportunities, there's quality of life here, we have a culture that you can be proud of, and that's something that we work really hard on. As I mentioned, we're raising rates. We need to pay competitive, and we need to be able to attract the talent and the people that we need. And we're working on the rest of it as well, which is, a big challenge when you're also trying to grow so much. So people are working really hard, And I think it's just about, you know, from my perspective, you know, my job has been, you know, when I first got here, it was primarily as a strategist and trying to build a plan that was going to be successful. And then it was about execution as we, you know, implemented that plan. And then it was about survival as we made it through COVID. And now it's about being a cheerleader. Mm. And just making sure everybody is as excited about Sun Country as I am is, I think, kind of my main job today. So, you know, the labor market, I think, is probably going to stabilize. And airlines are particularly challenged because we lost a lot of people by choice. You know, we were under payroll protection, but nonetheless, people moved on to other industries during COVID, and we have catching up to do. But it's a great industry. It's a lot of fun, and a lot of people have an affinity for travel, and, you know, it's great to deliver a product that you're proud of, but also one you can participate in yourself. So, you know, I think it'll stabilize, and we'll get on with it. And we're still hiring all the people we need. It's just going to take some time for us to catch up to the hiring that we caused through the COVID crisis.
Yeah, I get that. So, so talk to us about the future growth. I mean, you're positioned well to do, you talked about a runway ahead of you. Give us a little bit of a window into that. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we need three things. Well, we need four things for growth. We need capital. We are an IPO company now. We got plenty of cash. We need planes. We buy used airplanes, and we're always in the market for new ones. We have 5 airplanes in induction right now. We entered COVID with 31 airplanes, and we'll exit this year with 54, which is growth in excess, certainly on a percentage basis, than any airline that I know of anywhere in the world.
Yeah,
which is really exciting. And we need great people, and we're not having any trouble hiring the people we need. Where we are having a challenge with, which I talked a lot about at our last earnings call a few weeks ago, is getting them trained up and into position. Mm-hmm. So we're in a catch-up phase there, but the important bit is that we're not losing people beyond what we can manage, and we're attracting all the people we need, which is really, really great. So I think we're in a good place there. And then the fourth thing is opportunity. So if we're bringing on all this capacity, what are we going to do with it? And you know, Minnesota still is well below 2019 seats here in Minneapolis, and we intend to get that back. I mean, the balance we have is, it's important for me that Minnesotans have access to travel opportunities. And that's a function of being able to fly where you want to go when you want to get there, but also at a fare that you can afford. And so right now, airlines, in particular us, we're really trying to balance how much seats I put in the market and reduce the airfare with operational risk, because we're running close to red line during peak periods. And we, you know, a storm or, you know, another wave of COVID, even though no one's getting hurt, it still puts a lot of people out on sick. And, you know, that can gum things up for our passengers. So we're really trying to balance that out. But I think what you're going to see from us, you know, growth in kind of the next 2 years is adding more seats to the Minnesota market. There's a lot of unserved markets that Sun Country doesn't serve that are going to be successful for us. Some of our best markets over the summer were new markets like Indianapolis. And then in the wintertime, you know, we want to always have interesting destinations for people to go to. If you look at our track record for new launches, it included things like Roatan. This winter, we're launching Grand Caymans. Last winter, we launched Provincial, which is Turks, St. Thomas. You know, we used to fly to St. Martin. I'm anxious for that market to come back on. You know, so I just want to keep adding relatively small destinations, but most of the incremental seats that you're going to see from us are going to go to destinations that we already know Minnesotans love, like Vegas, Phoenix, Southern California, and most importantly, Florida.
You know, it's funny, it's fun when you list these places you're adding on as destinations. It's almost, Sun Country is unique in that okay, I want to go someplace. Let's go see where Sun Countries can take us this year. I mean, there is that direct connection to how are you going to deliver something fun and new? So there's the balance of the expected and the regular and this fun opportunity for you to tell us where you think we should go. Okay, where's Sun Country giving us a deal this month? Great. I mean, that's pretty unique.
And it is. I don't think that there's any other community that has a relationship and an airline like Sun Country has with Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Because the airline is built for the Minnesotan traveler. And we fly a schedule specific to the wants and needs of Minnesotans. Yeah. And I think there's really no other relationship like that. I mean, you know, lots of airlines are hub. Lots of communities have a hub airline. There are a lot of leisure carriers, but one that's focused so intently on a community and its very distinct travel patterns. No one travels like Minnesotans.
Yeah.
Most people travel more in the summer than in the winter. Minnesotans travel more in the winter than in the summer. We're prolific travelers. There's about 4.5 million of us, 90 minutes drive from the MSP airport. And, you know, we punch way above our weight on how much we spend. And how much
we want to get out of here.
How many days we've been on the road. It's just, you know, it's obviously it's a product of our geography, but it's a great community to be an airline for.
Absolutely. What's funny you say that, because my best friends live in North Carolina still, and we do that. They're from Fargo, actually, and they became Southerners. And so we do that. I visit them in the winter and they come home and visit us in the summer. And totally an example of that. So let's shift gears. We don't have a whole lot of time left and there's so much about you we want to know more about. So as a veteran, I was sparked by this idea that a Marine Corps captain was taking over an airline. I found out you had, you know, experience such that this wasn't unusual for your professional career, but how has the military helped you in your leadership roles, particularly this one, which has had to face real challenges and opportunities in the last 5 years?
In so many ways, let me just first say that it wasn't an easy transition for me. I loved being a Marine and I went back to school and then my first jobs weren't successful. I started out as a trader in Houston and I was very unhappy. And then I went and worked for a big company again. It was a big struggle. That was my first experience in a cubicle.
Ooh.
And it was tough. And then, you know, I got with a bunch of guys that were starting Allegiant and it was basically a startup. And, you know, it just had kind of the same mentality of let's try new things and get it done that I had liked about the Marine Corps. And it was smaller community where we all knew each other in the early days at Allegiant. And I was just really drawn to it. And I think that was finally when I got my footing in corporate America. and I did really well there. And obviously, you know, ended up running the company, but this is kind of, you know, what set me up for success here, I think, is the confidence in myself that I think that I could make an impact, and also a relative understanding of kind of severity. Like I hear it all the time. Like if we're, you know, when revenue went to zero, I heard a lot of like, oh, this is a disaster. And look, it's not a disaster. It's just corporate America. I mean, we're gonna be okay. I hope Sun Country survives. I think it will. We'll do everything that it can. But even if it doesn't, nobody's shooting at us, you know. I mean, this is, let's put things in relative importance here. And I think that's just really, that's a valuable perspective, in particular when you're dealing with crisis in a business.
Mm-hmm.
My advice for junior officers, and my son's actually a private in the Army right now. So anybody coming out, yeah, it's funny. Anybody Great. Coming out of the military, I think is, you know, the way you interpret your experience is really important. You have leadership opportunities that are probably more than most folks will have in an entire career in private industry. However, you also don't have any relevant experience direct to industry. So you're coming out and, you know, I've never worked in Excel or never seen, you know, I had a budget or, you know, there were sort of practical things. I didn't know anything about airlines. And, you know, I certainly felt comfortable counseling, hiring and firing, you know, trying to get the best out of my employees, but I didn't have any real practical experience. I think a lot of people have a hard time making that transition to say, look, I'm going to both come in with a lot of experience that's really valuable to my employer, but also I'm going to be a student about the industry that I'm joining for a relatively long period of time. Because, you know, my peers are going to come right out of undergrad and jump right in with both feet. And I'm, you know, exactly like they are, but they're 8, 9, 10 years younger than me in some respects.
Interesting. So then what are some key takeaways then from your unique perspective on leadership? What have been some key takeaways for you for these last 2+ years? I mean, I just think that this has been I don't know how you put it, but such a platform to display your leadership abilities or to unfortunately highlight the challenges in a leadership style, right? So what would you say are some key takeaways from a leadership perspective or learnings for folks?
Well, thank you for those compliments. I mean, first I'd say, my leadership philosophy has evolved. And as a platoon commander, the Marine Corps is almost cultish in their fanaticism. and it's an extreme environment. And because it's, you know, in some cases, life and death, I mean, it's just an extreme environment. And everybody is just laser focused. And then when I kind of take that into corporate America, I'd like, you know, read Jack Welch's philosophy and stack rating my employees and trying to always get the, you know, very best out of people and get rid of people that weren't pulling their weight. And I've made huge evolution to now saying, like, look, I think everybody has opportunity to contribute to an organization, and it's my job to find where and how they can make that contribution. It doesn't always work with everybody and people move on, but, you know, this isn't, you know, in the Marine Corps, we're working really hard at these short bursts of deployments and, you know, battles and conflicts. And now this is like making a career that's going to be 40 years for many people, and it needs to have balance and purpose. And, you know, they need to feel respected for what they bring and who they are. And I think, you know, my evolution as a leader is really trying to be a lot more like a cheerleader and trying to get to know everybody. And so my counselings today are a lot less, you know, like look back on when I was a second lieutenant, that was, you know, it wouldn't fit very well here. And so it's a lot more like, you know, how can I make a career path for you that works for you and meets your goals? And how are we doing as an employer to meet your expectations? And I ask those kind of questions a lot more. That's not a question the Marine Corps ever asked. Really.
Right. Tracking with you.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, the main thing is just for me, like being more, just kind of a better and more understanding leader in corporate America has a lot to do with, you know, you have to motivate people for their own reasons, you know, like you have to try to get into someone's head. And in the Marine Corps, it's just like everybody was so fanatic about being a Marine, you know, motivating wasn't right. a challenge. That was there already. And here I spend a lot of time cheerleading, really. And I think that's it's just really important because, you know, ultimately people want to go home to their families, and what they do at work is important, but it doesn't define them as much as it did being in the service.
Yeah, I totally connect with what you're saying there. All right, we're having to wind down, which is really unfortunate for me. But before we do, I have one final question I'd like to ask all of my guests, in part because I'm a sophomore in my position, really, too. August is my 5-year anniversary, and we've been going through a transition of our own as we continue to, you know, change and learn and do things in new and innovative ways to be more relevant and sustainable. So I ask all of my guests, you know, how valuable is chamber engagement to your work? And how can we continue to do better to amplify your strategic priorities?
Yeah, so what it does for me personally is allow me to meet other business leaders in the community so that I can build a better network so that they can understand my business and my commitment to the local community, and that I can understand their business and their commitment to the local community. I think as executives, we spend a lot of time with our heads down. I mean, my daily routine, probably for the first hour of most days, is emails and reports, and it's mostly all having to do with how my business is doing. And I think it's really important that I, you know, have a network of people that has educating me on what the issues are in the community, what best practices are with my peers in the business world are doing, how we can get involved politically in bettering our community for the people we live around. That's what I get from the chamber.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So unfortunately, we have run out of time, but first of all, thank you again for chatting with me, Dude. I appreciate it. I know you're busy. Appreciate both your time and all of your what your airline is doing to serve our community. And you're doing so in such a fun, inclusive way, such that we want to go see what you're up to. So thank you again.
Well, thanks for chatting with us, Bea. We really appreciate it.
Well, and thank you all listeners for joining us for Bea's Table Talk. We have more conversations in the weeks ahead, speaking to business leaders in the greater MSP region, hearing from them on how their companies are adapting to the new normal ahead of us. Thanks to everyone, and we will see you in the trenches.